Good afternoon and welcome to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Tom Lounges, I'm your host, and this program is all about music and the people who make it. My guest today has been on the show a number of times in the past, but never to celebrate 50 years in the business. And that's exactly what we're addressing today. Ian Anderson, founder, flautist, frontman, singer, songwriter, producer of Jethro Tull, on the phone with us. Jethro Tull celebrating their 50th year in show business. They are coming to Ravinia in Highland Park on Labor Day, September 3rd. The 50th anniversary collection that my guest Ian Anderson has put together is called 50 for 50 because, well, it taps 50 songs from their illustrious catalog. Let's start off with a song right now that kind of sums it all up, because truly, you're never too old to rock and roll, as Ian Anderson continues to prove with each and every new tour. Let's enjoy this one together, and on the other side of this song, I'll be speaking with the man himself, Ian Anderson. He'll join us momentarily.
War is drawn the cops too tight. Unfashionable to the end. Drag his aid to light. There's a belt buckle, yesterday's dreams. The transport cap, prophet of doom. Double sound seems it is. First one, babe, the gloom. Now it's two of the rock and roll. But it's too young to die. Yes, it's two of the rock and roll. Once on a holiday, David Simon, and a triumph on the hill, counted his friends in Bernhardt's Park class, praised that he always will. But he's the last of the blue lots, a grease and boys, and all is made to do in time. Married with three kids, up on the ring road, sold the soul straight down the line. And some of them own a little sports cars, and meet at the tennis club too. But drinks on a Sunday, work on Monday, they throw away the blues, so I choose. Now they're two of the rock and roll, and they're too young to die. Oh, yes, they're two of the rock and roll.
Time before he takes his leave. On the A1 by Scotch Corner, just like it used to be.
And as he flies, tears in his eyes, his wind whipped words echo the final take. And he hits the truck road till he drives 120 with no room left to break. And he went to
those are words to live by. Literally, you're never too old to rock and roll if you're too young to die. A classic Jethro Tull song written by my guest this afternoon, Mr. Ian Anderson, the leader of Jethro Tull for 50 years. The band is celebrating its 50th anniversary, performing this Labor Day, Monday, September 3rd, at Ravinia in Highland Park, Illinois. Well, I'm told he's on the phone with us. Let's find out. Hello.
Hello, Tom Lounges. This is Ian Anderson.
Hi, Ian. How are you? Good to speak with
you
again.
I'm very well.
First of all, this is the 50th anniversary, so congratulations on that. How did the UK tour go, and how many dates are you planning for America?
Well, the UK tour began, that was back in April. We did a two or three warm-up shows in Scandinavia before we did that. And so it's a concert tour, as you can imagine, celebrating the repertoire of early Jethro Tull, particularly the first 10 years, and of the 36 band members who've been, you know, my buddies over all that period of time. And they, not just whether they recorded the original tracks on an album, but they've all had to play that material on countless shows over the years. And so I'm reminded of the fact that, you know, the band identity is a very complex one, and mm-hmm. whereas obviously I'm the common factor, being the guy who stands in the middle and writes the music and produces the records and so on, but, you know, the other guys have their little moments in the sun, and that's something I'm trying to honor in the shows that we do. It's been not exclusively these kind of dates, because of course we do play some shows that are what I call non-production shows. They have no video, no fancy lights or whatever. We just go on, and sometimes without even a sound check if it's a festival, and we have to remember that we don't have the luxury of full technical production everywhere we play, you know, to some extent fairly basic concerts. Mm-hmm. And but outdoors in the summer, you know, the attitude from much of the audience is, as long as they've got a beer in their hands and access to the burger bar, then they're perfectly happy. But when we come to the USA, they are in production shows, even though most of them are being in the summer, and most of them are outdoor shows. This is our third U.S. tour this year, so we tend to break things up into three shorter tours rather than going for one long period of time away from home, which doesn't suit me at all.
Your tours recently have had so many amazing video productions. I know your son is very involved with that. For the 50th, are you going back into the archives with classic photos from over the years of these many members that you've mentioned?
Well, absolutely, yeah. There's little bits of moving video stills, and of course in the tour program or tour brochure or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. that's quite an extensive document that I wrote and prepared, and it's on sale at the concerts at the merch stand, and that too goes into a lot of detail about the early days of Jethro Tull, how we got together and how things have evolved over the years. So it's all part of the big picture. And I think, you know, when you do this, you have to give it the same attention as you would if it was a brand new project, which is perhaps easier to get excited about. But I wasn't terribly excited this time last year about doing, you know, the 50th anniversary production tours in 2018. But once I started to get really involved in the preparation, which I did, you know, from the summer onwards last year, then I got excited about that in the same way as I would if it was a brand new project. And, you know, you're presented with a number of artistic decisions that you have to make, and practical and technical decisions you have to make, and then you've got to get it all together. You've got to, and the musicians, of course, have got to learn music, much of which they've never played before, because it's stuff that hasn't usually been in the set list in recent years. I mean, not all of it, but, you know, a few songs. And some of them, of course, have been, because they're slightly different arrangements to fit the realities of doing this particular set list in a finite period of time every night, then we have to fine-tune it all, and all of that takes a while, and everybody has to do their homework and arrive pretty much on day one knowing exactly what it is they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
The band, but of course the technical crew as well.
When you're falling awake and you take stock of the new day, and you hear your voice croak as you choke on what you need to say, well, don't you fret, don't you fear, I will give you good cheer. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. If you wait, then you play it, I will feel. As the verses unfold and your soul suffers the long day, and the 12 o'clock gloom spins the room, you struggle on your way. Well, don't you sigh, don't you cry, lick the dust from your eye. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. We will meet in the sweet light of dawn, as the Baker Street train fills your pain all over your new dress, and the symphony sounds underground, but you wanted you a rest. Well, don't you squeal as the heel grinds you under the wheels. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song, but the tune ends too soon for the song.
Life's a long song. Indeed it is. 50 years long in the case of Ian Anderson and Jethro Tull. You're listening to the Midwest Beat Radio program here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Tom Lounges. Jethro Tull is celebrating his 50th anniversary as a band with a concert here in Chicago this Labor Day, September 3rd, at Ravinia in Highland Park. I'll be there, and maybe you will too. Let's continue now talking with Ian Anderson, the founder, flautist, singer, songwriter, producer of Jethro Tull. Ian, let's talk about this new release, 50 for 50, 50 songs out of the Jethro Tull catalog, which is now available as a 3-LP or 3-CD collection. There's also an abridged version, of course, for those with a lesser budget of more of the mainstream hits. Let's talk about the picking of those songs. Was it an easy task? Was it difficult? What was it like for you to go through that massive Jethro Tull catalog to find the songs you ultimately settled on?
Well, it wasn't something that I'm unfamiliar with, because I do it, you know, two or three times a year anyway. I go through the entire Jethro Tull discography to look at, you know, for bits of material that I might think about doing on, you know, some concert in the upcoming months or maybe the upcoming years, because I, for practical reasons, because we do book things quite a bit ahead, you know, I have a working set list for different kinds of concerts next year, and I'm well used to going through all the material, so there's nothing that I would say I'm not very familiar with. I do listen to most of it, you know, typically, you know, once or twice every year, and even if I don't listen to all the music, I'm going through the list of songs and what keys they're in, what tempos they're in, trying to make a sensible set list out of things and keeping it a bit varied. That's what I do. Getting the 50 songs together for the 3-CD 50 for 50 album release was rather easier than whittling it down to 20 songs for a live concert show. A little bit more flexibility when you've got 50 to play with. Having said that, of course, they have to squeeze into the physical limitations of 3 CDs, and so that rather ties your hands in terms of certain songs which you might want to have on there, but, you know, if they last 10 minutes or 12 minutes or something, that rather rules them out, because that takes up the space of 3 normal-length songs. So there are certain restrictions, and as I say, you've got to pick varied tempos, varied keys, varied subject material, lyrically speaking. So, you know, trying to find things that will match and provide a light and shade and dynamic variation as you listen to the sequentially to the songs that are in there. But, you know, as I say, it's what I do. It's when you devote a couple of hours to going through it all. And in fact, when I sent my list in to the record company, they'd already prepared a list of their own, and I think we were actually only 2 songs adrift out of 50.
That's pretty impressive.
What I came up with and what they came up with was remarkably similar.
You're listening to Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. Let's play another classic song off the 50 for 50 retrospective album celebrating Jethro Tull's 50th anniversary. On the other side, we'll get back to talking with Ian Anderson, who's bringing the van this Labor Day to Ravinia in Highland Park, Illinois.
Time loser, headlong true as death. Oh, it feels a intestines scraping, steam breaking on his brow. Old Charlie stole the handle, and the train in one stop. Oh, no, it could slow down. Oh. He sees his children jumping off the stations one by one. Woman and his best friend in bed and having fun. Oh, it's calling down the corridor on his hands and knees. Oh, Charlie stole the handle, and the train, it won't stop going. No, it took slow down. Hey. Silence howling catches angels as they fall, and the all-time winner has got him by the balls. Oh, he picks up Gideon's Bible, open at page one. I thank God he stole the handle, and the train in watch top. Oh, and oh, it could slow down.
In the shuffling madness of 50 years, that song still stands out. Jethro Tull, Locomotive Breath. I'm Tom Lounges, and of course, we've got Ian Anderson, lead singer, flautist, founder, producer, frontman. I mean, you name it, he does it all. He's the chief bottle washer as well for Jethro Tull. They are in town this Labor Day weekend on Monday, September 3rd, at Ravinia in Highland Park. Ian,
you have told me in the past that Ian Anderson albums are actually Jethro Tull albums and vice versa, but you rarely, if ever, perform songs from your solo build albums, like Language of Birds, Divinity's Rupees Dance. Are you including anything from those amazing albums in this career-encompassing tour?
Well, not on this tour, no, because I'm focusing really on the period of time when most Jethro Tull fans got to know the music, and that is the music really from 68 through 78. And I think in that period of time, the original fans, you know, worldwide, Jethro Tull had become established by the end of the 70s, and, mm-hmm. and so most people who were ever going to be remotely interested in Jethro Tull had got into it by then. And then, of course, in more recent years, you have a sprinkling of younger fans who are, you know, in teenagers or early 20s, and they weren't alive back then. They stumble upon that music as they do the music of much of classic rock, which is, I suppose, of historical and cultural importance in the same way that, you know, classical music 200 years ago has that place in the scheme of things. So when they discover that music, they will naturally gravitate, you know, to the earlier days of Led Zeppelin or Elton John or Jethro Tull or Deep Purple or whoever it might be. They're going to find those experience for them the first time, it's experiencing that same excitement as people had back in those years when they heard that music for the first time. And I think it does resonate because it's the period when usually most successful acts, I think, if they're lucky enough to survive more than a few years, you probably will find that the, you know, 80% of their best known work will be in that first 10 years or so of their existence, whether it's the Rolling Stones or Elton John or Rod Stewart or whoever it might be, you know, pop groups and pop artists and rock bands alike. You know, that 10-year span is usually going to encompass the big hitters, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of repertoire. And so that's what I'm really trying to do on this tour. So it's not exclusively the first 10 years, but there's a definite emphasis on that period of time when I think Jethro Tull was making its mark, not just in the UK or the USA, but literally throughout the world.
Meanwhile, back in the year one, when you belonged to no one, you didn't stand a chance, son, if your pants were undone, 'cause you were bred for humanity and sold to society. One day you'll wake up in the present day, a million generations removed from expectations of a being who you really want to be. Skating away, skating away, skating away on the thin ice of a new day. So as you push off from the shore, won't you turn your head once more and make your peace with everyone? For those who choose to stay, who will live just one more day to do the things they should have done. And as you cross the wilderness, suspending in your emptiness, you really have to pray. Looking for a sign that the universal mind has written you into the passion play. Skating away, skating away, skating away on the thin ice of a new day. As you cross the circle line, well, the eyes will greet behind. You're a rabbit on the run, and the silver splendors fly in the corner of your eye, shining in the setting sun. Well, do you ever get the feeling that the story's too damn real and in the present tense? All and everybody's on the stage, and it seems like you're the only person sitting in the audience. Skating away, skating away, skating away on the thin ice of the new day.
Ian Anderson is my guest this afternoon here on Midwest Beat. If you just tuned in, Jethro Tull, his band, is celebrating its 50th anniversary as a group. They're touring America right now. They'll be this weekend at Ravinia in Highland Park on Monday, Labor Day, September 3rd, for a 7 p.m. show. Ian has handpicked 50 songs from the catalog that have been issued recently as 50 for 50, a 3-LP or 3-CD collection. There's also an abridged version on a 1-LP or 1-CD collection of some of the more mainstream songs, but I do recommend digging into the deep catalog and getting that 3-pack, if you will. You, last year, released the String Quartet album, which was basically a reinvention of a lot of Jethro Tull material in chamber style. How well received was that? I thought that was one of the best albums that you have done in many, many years. Were you pleased with the results, as far as the response?
Well, I have absolutely no idea. I don't really have that direct feedback. I mean, it performed about on target with what we expected. Clearly, and I think I said on... in some promotion or on our website. You know, this is not for everybody. This is right. This is a somewhat specialist album of well-known songs, but done in a way which may appeal to and interest some Jethro Tull fans. But I'm kind of trying to warn people off expecting something that can't actually be provided by four acoustic musicians in a string quartet playing completely live together, and then, you know, with a, you know, a little bit of fairy lights on the Christmas tree coming from me on flute or guitar or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think it did about what we expected it would do, and I haven't had any nasty responses of people, you know, being upset that they bought something that they didn't like or felt that they'd been duped into buying something. I think most people did understand what it was that they were getting, and it seems to have, you know, been a worthwhile little side project. But that's exactly what it was. It was just one of those little side projects that I'd thought about some years ago, and I just made a little note, you know, string quartet album, and, you know, and I have two or three others like that I'll get round to working on the next couple of years, but, you know, little side projects mm-hmm. that aren't necessarily, you know, mainstream projects like making a new album or coming up with some conceptual tour or something. That's a big project. I'm talking about the little kind of things that you do that are things you want to tick those boxes before it's too late. And I think there are a few things. Some people might have exactly that frame of mind, and they want to visit Machu Picchu, or they want to go to Yellowstone Park, or they want to bungee jump off the Brooklyn Bridge or something before mm-hmm. they die. I have no interest in really doing those things. I do have an interest in these other little box-ticking exercises that I think if I don't do them in the next two or three years, it could be too late. But they don't have necessarily to do with self-pleasuring, like being a tourist. Okay. more of artistic vanity.
Well, I
think they have to do with those sort of vanity projects, really. That's what they are.
You're listening to Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. And for those Jethro Tull fans that might have missed the quartet's album last year, let's go back and play a track. This is an interesting one. The chamber version of Farm on the Freeway. In this case, it's called Farm on the Four-Way. More with Ian Anderson and more Jethro Tull music coming up. Keep it here.
Thank you.
on the Four-Way, the chamber version of Farm on the Freeway off the Quartet's album last year. My guest is Ian Anderson here on Midwest Beat this afternoon. Jethro Tull celebrating his 50th anniversary as a band and coming to Ravinia in Highland Park this Labor Day weekend. Catch him on Monday, September 3rd. I know I will. Hopefully I'll see you there. Ian, that album, that Quartet's album, I know last year when we talked, you were very excited about it, and certainly John O'Hara was, as the musical director and arranger of that, was very excited as well. Do you think we'll see a part two of that style of Jethro Tull music, or is it done? Has the box been checked, and is that the last of it?
Oh, I think we'll move on from there. It, you know, it was something nice to do, but I would feel going back and doing the same thing again would be, you know, be a bit repetitive. And of course, there's plenty other songs we could choose to do in that format. But I don't think it wouldn't be as fun or as exciting if we were to in any way replicate that process. Interestingly, John has just completed an album with the Carducci Quartet, being the musical backing for a British artist that is kind of known over here, probably not so much in your country. A lady called Barbara Dixon, who's been around for many years in the kind of folk and jazzy kind of world, and so her new album is her fronting the Carducci Quartet. She's a vocalist. So nice to know that, at least for John anyway, he had that experience and then could go on and do something quite different, but with the same musicians.
Mm-hmm. John has been a very creative force with the latter-day Jethro Tull. In fact, your entire lineup that you have had now for the last few years is probably among the best of all the history in the 50 years. Tell us a little bit about how you found Florian and how you and John had teamed up. They seem to be principal parts of the Jethro Tull sound today.
Well, I was doing the, I think it was the Rupees Dance album, which must have been, what, 90, what was that, maybe year 2000, something like that. 98, yeah, it might have been 98 when I started work on that, and David Goodyear, because I was looking for someone who could play stand-up bass, and someone who lived not too far away from me, and I came across David Goodyear's name and got in touch with him, and he came and we got together in the studio, and he ended up playing on a few tracks on that album, and I mentioned to him I was looking for an accordion player. Did he know anybody in the nearby town where he lives that played accordion? He said, well, actually I do, yeah, he's just got an accordion, he's you know, plays keyboards and tune percussion and things, but I'll ask him. So John O'Hara turned up with his accordion and played on a couple of songs, and then we had some dates being planned at that time with orchestras, and we had, and because John, having worked with orchestras and choirs, and being a trained classical musician, was again a very useful person to have in the band full time, because he could be working with me on those orchestral arrangements and conducting the orchestra and doing the shows that we started doing in early in that millennium. And so he came to me that way. Florian O'Parley was actually working with a German artist, playing guitar for an opening act that we had, and he came to work with me again, I think, on some orchestral shows. That was how he started working with me, and then stood in for Martin Barr a few times when Martin was not available or chose not to go to certain countries he wasn't fond of, and so people just, you know, you kind of keep an eye out for people that maybe even not at that particular moment, but maybe another year, you might think, well, that's someone that would be nice to work with, whether as a guest or as a full-time musician. Really depends on a lot of factors and how things pan out, but yeah, the guy's playing with me now have all been around for, I suppose it's 12 years now,
mm-hmm.
Except for Scott Hammond. 2010 was his first show. So he's only been with me now for 8 years. But the other guys, if you compare them to the longest standing lineups within Jethro Tull, I think they probably have the track record of having played as a band with me longer than any other version of the group, any other lineup.
Well, they certainly do, if you'll pardon the pun, stand up when it comes to the Jethro Tull material. They are, as I said, I think among your best lineups. But you did mention Martin in that last passing. It being the 50th anniversary, will he be popping up or doing anything, or any of the former members, because of the celebration of the five decades? Or is it strictly just the core group?
Well, you get to meet a few people along the way who either members of past members of the band or peer group musicians who make their brief appearance on the video screen, but
okay.
In terms of actual real life on stage appearances, that was something that, whilst I looked at that a year ago when I was working on the general layout of 2018 tours, I find it very difficult to come to terms with the reality that the guys that I would most like to have in the band, because they were perhaps very emblematic at the time of what Jethro Tull was about and made their presence very strongly felt through their stage performances, unfortunately those guys don't play music anymore. And obviously, you know, case of Glenn Cornick, he's no longer with us, and Mick Abrahams, our original guitar player, has for some years now been too ill to do very much these days, so he's not in good shape, and a few of the other guys are not feeling terribly well, so it's it becomes impossible, and then you then find, well, he's not available, he can't do it, he doesn't play music, he quit playing 40 years ago and never picked up his instrument again, so who am I left with? And then you start thinking, well, there's so-and-so and so-and-so, and I'm sure they'd be happy to come along and do a couple of songs somewhere, but it would in a way be not very representative to have lesser known or lesser loved band members appear when you can't actually have the guys who are the ones that perhaps whose performances and personality resonated most with the fans. And so it's a bit of an awkward one. And of course, Martin Barr, who, was certainly on the list, and we got in touch with Martin, I think, quite a while back, but it was, when I looked at his tour commitments this year, it became very obvious that when we were doing the UK tour, for example, that Martin was away, wherever he was away, he was not available then anyway to do that. And so, you know, you have these inevitable, rather impossible clashes of schedules and so on, and indeed the sad reality that when people have not played for many, many years, it's very hard to get back to that level of fitness, and not just physically, but, you know, the mental focus that you need to be able to do that kind of a thing. And that's the reality. I mean, it would have been nice to have had people like Geoffrey Hammond and John Evans, for example, to be able to get up and do a song or two. Obviously not every night, because you can't take somebody with you around the world and they only get to play two songs. And the other obvious factor is that it's not that great for the guys in the band to have to step out of the way and let somebody else come in and play the parts that they're used to playing for the last many years. And,
right.
And suddenly they get ousted from the stage in favor of some earlier version or incarnation of that particular job function. So there are lots of little delicate things there that finally made it not something we could do, but nonetheless, it was definitely considered with two or three members of the band that, you know, yeah, maybe they can get up and, you know, play with us on a show or two,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we're in their part of the country, or in their country, for that matter. Definitely stuff we looked at, but, as I say, too many complications.
Right. Well, that kind of underscores and leads us to play this next one from the 50 for 50 collection. Jethro Tull, Nothing Is Easy. More with Ian Anderson when we return.
Time gets you worrying, my friend, it's okay. Just take your life easy and stop all that hurrying. Be happy my way. When tension starts mounting and you've lost count of the pennies you missed, just try hard and see why they're not worrying me. The last on my list. Nothing's easy.
Nothing Is Easy, a classic track from the Jethro Tull catalog. Jethro Tull touring this year in support of their 50th anniversary. Hard to believe they've been around that long. Ian Anderson is my guest. He is the lead singer, flautist, songwriter, producer, arranger, and chief bottle washer for the band. Jethro Tull, 50 years going strong and coming to Ravinia in Highland Park this Labor Day weekend. You can catch him on Monday, September 3rd. It's a 7 p.m. show. Speaking of endurance and going for 50 years strong, Ian, you seem to be in rather good health lately. The last several tours I've seen, you are moving freely, you're energized. Let's talk about how you stay in this kind of shape after all these years.
Well, I think it has mostly to do with keeping on doing it. You know, if I was to take 6 months off and not play any concerts, I would be facing a mountain to climb to get back to that mental and physical acceptable level again. It's harder and harder. So I try not to go more than a very few days without doing shows. Sometimes I do have, a month goes by, especially around Christmas, New Year, when I'm not actually doing any live concerts. And it takes a while. It takes, it takes quite a bit of dedicated work and practice to get back to that level again. But, once you're there, the easiest way of not falling off the bicycle is to keep pedaling. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tend to do, both physically and mentally. It keeps me in better shape. And I also have taken the advice of one eminent classical flautist who told me that the older he got, the more he had to practice and rehearse music for flute concertos and major performances. And I took that to heart. I realized, yes, you're right, that you can't take it for granted. You actually do have to put more hours in behind the scenes, preparing for things and days in advance and really trying to make sure that you don't slip behind in terms of your dexterity or your ability to concentrate, remember huge amounts of stuff, because of course we're not reading it from music, we have to have it all in our heads. It's something you do have to put a fair amount of work into, and so far I don't have a problem remembering. Usually, I remember most of the things I've got to sing and play. I probably play two or three bum notes on the flute every night, and hopefully only one of them will be heard or noticed by the audience. Similarly with remembering all the words to the songs, I fluff some things, but so does everybody.
Ian Anderson is my guest this afternoon here on Midwest Beat. If you just tuned in, Jethro Tull, his band, is celebrating its 50th anniversary as a group. They're touring America right now. They'll be this weekend at Ravinia in Highland Park on Monday, Labor Day, September 3rd, for a 7 p.m. show. Ian has handpicked 50 songs from the catalog that have been issued recently as 50 for 50, a 3-LP or 3-CD collection. There's also an abridged version on a 1-LP or 1-CD collection of some of the more mainstream songs, but I do recommend digging into the deep catalog and getting that 3-pack, if you will. More with Ian on the other side as we continue to explore and enjoy the music of Jethro Tull. Here's one you might remember.
Greasy fingers, smearing shabby clothes. clings on to your bed with screaming agony. Hey. Then you snatch your rattling last breaths with deep sea dive of sounds, and the flowers bloom like madness in the spring. Sun streaking cold, an old man wandering lonely, taking time the only way he knows. Leg hurting bad as he bends to pick a docket, he goes down to the bar and warms his feet. Oh, 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 oh. Feeling alone, the army's on the road, salvation and a boat.
Classic track from the Jethro Tull catalog. Jethro Tull turning 50 years this year. The band is performing this Monday, September 3rd, at Ravinia in Highland Park. My guest is Ian Anderson, leader and founder of the group. Ian? Jethro Tull has become kind of a cottage industry for your family. Your son, your daughter have been involved behind the scenes. And I know you've got grandchildren now. Are they showing musical desires to go into the show business realm?
Well, my granddaughter has is borrowing a saxophone from me, in the mistaken belief that the saxophone is an enjoyable thing to pick up and play. I'm hoping she she, I'm hoping for the sake of her parents also and her little brother that she gets over that one fairly quickly, because it's maybe not as punishing as playing the violin or being a drummer, but certainly can ruin the household harmony to have a squawking saxophone coming from the room next door. But I think really the children, they accept these things. It's just the way things are in their family, you know, the fact that they have a grandfather who's a musician, an uncle who's, you know, also been a musician and does stuff, and their father is an actor of ill repute and cuts the heads off zombies. This is just sort of par for the course. You know, they assume that everybody's parents and family do these things. It doesn't seem particularly remarkable, nor do they. They're not particularly enamored or excited about it, or you know, disenchanted with it. It's just the way things are. So, I think if they turn out to be in some way interested in the world of arts and entertainment when they get older, that will be not a surprise, but it equally would not be a surprise if they decide to become astronauts or gynecologists or be involved in the arms industry. You know, my granddaughter suddenly announced that she was really wanting to be working on bombs and missiles, and I'd shrug and say, well, okay. Yeah, just be careful where you put them. I'm afraid I've got to go, because I've got another interview which I'm overdue for now, but
alrighty.
If you want to wind it up with a quickie last one, I'll do that.
Well, just wanted to know if you mentioned the different projects you always have simmering on the back burner. If there's anything you would care to give us a sneak peek at verbally, tell us what might be next after this 50th anniversary hoopla is all subsided.
Well, you just asked me the one thing I always have to decline to answer, for the simple reason that when I'm anything new that I'm working on, whether it's virtually complete or whether it's just in its embryonic stages, I've always had this thing, it's bad luck to talk about it until it's actually complete and done deal and it's too late to change anything. Up until that moment, it just always seems to me like a bad luck invitation, really, to talk about, because you never really know how things are going to go, and sometimes you have an idea and then somewhere along the line it adopts a new identity. It becomes, you know, really quite different. And if you compare how it turns out to how you might have described it to somebody 6 months or a year before, you're left feeling a little bit, you know, with egg on the face, because you didn't do what you said it was going to do.
Right.
And that's always been something I've been very nervy about. I used to feel that about making records. You know, I would never tell the other guys the titles of the songs. I never let them see the lyrics. We would work on the music, and they would never know what the final result was going to be until they got a copy of the record. I mean, literally, because they weren't in the studio when I was mixing it and doing all that stuff. They just kind of accepted that this was the bit that I needed to kind of keep rather private, and that's just the way I always worked back then. These days I tend to send the guys little demos. I send them all the lyrics, I send them all the basic harmonic structure of a song, and then so they have a real assembly kit of parts that they can work from, and I think maybe that helps them find the right entree into each piece of music.
Okay.
Because they can see what it's about. It has a title, it has lyrics, it's in this key, it observes this, you know, this verse, this intro, that chorus, that instrumental section, whatever it might be. The building blocks are there, and I think it must be more satisfying these days for the musicians I work with to have that better outline to work with, rather than being perhaps somewhat denied it because of my hesitancy, my embarrassment perhaps in revealing things as personal as lyrics can be. I always find it very difficult to sing with anybody else in the room. You know, I have to be on my own. It's like taking a shower, really, when you sing a song for the first time. I mean, you are stark naked and very vulnerable, and you may slip on the soap and find yourself on your arse in the shower.
Right, right.
And that's exactly what it's like when you first attempt to sing a song. Unlikely to be anything other than excruciatingly embarrassing until you've run through it a few times, and then bang, you go for that take, and you hope that maybe 50% of what you sing is going to be on the final record, that you don't have to do too much of it again. But that's the kind of pattern I think I tried to work to. So I've dodged your question with all the diplomacy that your current president fails to have when he takes to Twitter.
All right. Well, Ian, I appreciate you giving me so much time, and we respect the fact you like to keep your art close to the vest until it's ready to unveil. But let's just say that you will be around for a very long time with many projects to come.
Yeah. Thank you very much indeed. Good to talk to you. Take care.
All right. Thank you, Ian. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
The workboat shuffled, loose brains from brawn. I'm a monkey puzzle, and the lid is on. Can you guess my name? Can you guess my trade? I'm gonna get you anyway. You might be right. I'll give you guesses three. Feel me climbing up your knee. Guess what I am?
Steel Monkey, Jethro Tull. They'll be in town on Labor Day, September 3rd, Ravinia in Highland Park. Ian Anderson, my guest this afternoon here on Midwest Beat. Always a pleasure to talk to him. And I'm sure we'll be talking to him again down the road because he's a guy that never seems to stop. Until next time, I'm Tom Lounges. Keep on rocking. Adios.